Canucks Central Tuesday. It's Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah in the Kintec studio. Lots to come today as the Canucks get ready for the Dallas Stars at Rogers Arena tonight. So lots to get into on this National Pie Day and National Potato Chip Day. I don't know how they coincided as the same day. Well, I guess because National Potato Chip Day somehow managed to be on Pie Day, which is March 14th every single year.
So National Potato Chip Day and Pie Day are on the same day?
What are you going for, pizza or potato chip?
Pizza?
Or both? They do go well together, I guess.
Yeah, probably both.
Are we counting pizza as pie?
I mean,
I was like, yeah, I got confused for a second. I'm like, wait, are we talking pie as in like apple pie or like what pizza?
Well, what do you call it? You call it a pizza pie, man.
Is that what it's called?
Nah, you can.
If you want. I mean, I guess you can call it whatever you want. I guess you can call it edible saucer if you want. I don't know if that makes it a good idea.
You've never called a pizza a pie.
No, I have. But I mean, when I think of National Pie Day, I think you're being disingenuous by including
oh,
pizza.
Oh, so you're like just it. You're going for like the apple crisp or something
Yeah, because I'm sure there's a National Pizza Day that's very specific.
Well. I mean, we could double up. Who doesn't love pizza?
It has its own day.
It's the world's favorite food.
By the way, it's February 9th is National Pizza Day. We missed it.
Oh. He missed it. Josh knows those words very well as a Minnesota Vikings fan.
Why did that have to come up? Just because I called you up for the pizza pie thing.
Why is he catching strays?
All right, let's get in on the Vancouver Canucks. As they get ready for the Dallas Stars here tonight, it's Andre Kuzmenko continues to surprise everybody. The headlines never stop. He had the big autograph signing over the weekend where the line basically filled up the entire bottom level of Metrotown.
I think people are still lined up right now.
It's crazy. Oh, it was Guilford? Oh, okay.
Victor Mall's right.
Jeez. They all look the same. Malls all look alike. What do you want
just
from me?
Just like pizzas and pies.
Yeah, pizzas. Just conflating everything.
Guilford, Metrotown, all the same. It's all good. Okay, so Guilford Town Center.
Yes, very good.
And great mall, by the way. And it's like here's a star that just absolutely came out of nowhere for the Vancouver Canucks, right? I feel like that's almost gotten lost in all this. Just like what a lottery ticket it is to have found this player. And as we mentioned yesterday with Frank Saravalli, you kind of have to do it again to truly be a star. Mm-hmm. You don't want him to be Brady Anderson, to make a really old baseball reference.
50 home runs, man.
But where does he now rank for the Canucks amongst their most important players?
I mean, in terms of on the ice importance, it's hard to rank him, obviously, ahead of Pedersen, Hughes, Demko, and I'd say even JT when he's going because of the position that he plays.
Yep.
Horonic, we got to see here, right? But in terms of marketability, I'd say he's like right behind Pedersen. Like even with Quinns is a popular player. But I think because of the charisma that Kuzmenko has, wouldn't you say in terms of popularity right now and sellability, he's number two behind Pedersen? It could be in the moment because people are just so enamored with everything he's doing and he's the new guy, right? Like he's the fresh meat, right? And you know everything's kind of really enticing about him. On ice importance, because he's a winger, I think he still falls behind the core there, like those you know centers and defensemen we talk about. But I don't think there's a player outside of Pedersen that's more marketable right now.
It is, you know, shiny new toy type vibes, I guess, a little bit with Andre Kuzmenko. You get the new player, big free agent signing, even though, you know, it didn't come with the big contract, at least at first, and hits the ground running, scores incredible goals. But I do think the personality part of it is huge, you know. Just a happy to be here type of mentality that people just can relate to so well.
Yeah, I mean, he's got this enthusiasm about playing in the NHL and playing hockey that's so infectious, right? He represents what you would imagine life would be like if you were a star player in the NHL. Scoring a lot of goals, having a lot of fun, laughing, enjoying every moment of it. And you think, I mean, how often do you watch as a fan and think to yourself, what reason would this player ever have to be unhappy?
Yeah.
Or what reason would you ever have to not be enjoying life, right? And I think obviously, the reality is human beings have human interactions with other people and human things happen, which means unhappiness is a part of, you know, daily life and, you know, things are going to happen, right? But he just seems to have a real positive aura about him. And if you look at it organizationally, obviously he's important to them on the ice. But this is a player this organization is going to be able to make a lot of money off the ice.
Yeah.
And if you look at what Patrick Alvin has done in terms of trying to convince ownership about the job he's doing, well, being a winner is going to be a big part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But finding a star player that's marketable, that helps sell tickets, that helps sell interest, that you can stage events for,
mm-hmm.
that represents your brand in a very positive way. Like right now, especially after everything that happened with Boudreaux, like yeah. Kuzmenko's the magic tonic at the moment.
Well, he's kind of turned everybody's page, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, we love this player. The video of him exchanging the stick for a banana, now the sound of him saying, hey, bring Kit Kats and whatever else. I mean, we'll see what's at warm-up tonight at Rogers Arena.
Please don't bring actual meat and, like, food.
Yes, don't
like,
do that.
I'm fine with, you know, some candy
don't
or whatever.
Don't be throwing steaks on the ice.
Yeah.
Like, but
like, don't be, you know, tossing, like, kebabs over
yeah.
or anything.
Yeah. And don't throw a Coca-Cola can onto the ice
please
either
no.
and just explode everywhere. But he's topped, like, you know, 32 goals is just outside the top 10 in the league. He's got more goals than Austin Matthews, Sidney Crosby, John Tavares. He's got the most goals on this team, which is pretty surprising, mm-hmm. even ahead of Elias Pettersson. We always come back to the shooting percentage, and yeah. that's the one thing he has that everybody is going to continue to point to because it is at a rate that is very, what's the in vogue word these days? Unsustainable.
Yes, it is unsustainable. The shooting percentage is.
So how do we project him moving forward after this season and what we can expect from Andre Kuzmenko with what we've already seen here?
Well, I think you're going to see a player who's going to be a bit more reliable in terms of predictability that the coach wants to see, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because he shows a real willingness to do that. And I think over time, what that could end up doing is reduce his numbers slightly because he'll be taking, you know, some fewer chances. Like even the goal he scored against, I mean, the setup he had against the Predators, I mean, that he set up JT Miller for.
Yep.
You know, the coach even said, I mean, he probably should be dumping that puck in instead of making the play at the blue line, right? Especially at that stage, you make the turnover, you're going the other way. And hey, it was at the end of the game and it worked out and you ended up tying the game. And obviously you're the big hero. But generally speaking, that might be the low percentage play. And sometimes if you don't do those types of plays, you're going to leave some value on the table points-wise, but you also don't give up as much. So you become a safer player, a more predictable player. The coach is going to trust you a lot more. And I think if we get to a stage where Kuzmenko next year can play against anybody at any time of the game, that's a huge improvement. Because I think that also is going to tell you about what can happen come the postseason.
Yeah.
Because all the stuff we're talking about with Kuzmenko is a huge win for the organization, right? He's been great this year. He's a marketable player. You're making money off him. He'll be a net positive next year no matter what, right? He's going to give you some level of production. But does he, if he becomes the type of player who can succeed in the postseason, then all of a sudden you got a chance.
Yeah.
Now you've added a player that you can actually win with. And if that's the case, well, we know Miller's the type of player that you think can succeed in that situation. We know Pettersson can. So that then you have two lines that can actually play in the postseason potentially if you get there. I think that's a pretty important thing because one of my concerns, and this is what we talked to Frank about yesterday in terms of what was a real value at the deadline for him.
Yeah.
Because teams are going to look at him and say, he's super talented, but can we trust him in the postseason? If we're a team that's going to play 20 games in the playoffs,
yeah.
that means we're going to get to the cup final. How long before we healthy scratch this guy? Because mm-hmm. he has to learn.
Yeah. And it's, I think the best example is probably Thomas Vanek. Not
yeah.
even, you know, the year he got traded out of Vancouver for Tyler Motte when there was basically no suitors for him.
Mm-hmm.
You had Thomas Vanek, who has been and had been one of the better players in the National Hockey League from an offensive perspective, but his playoff numbers were so poor that come deadline time, teams yeah. didn't want him.
No, it didn't matter anymore. It's like, yeah, you can score 25, 30 in the regular season, but I can't rely on you every shift in the postseason.
Yep.
And I don't think Kuzmenko is going to be that type of player, and that's what's exciting, because if he's doing this and then he can be that type of player next year, then it gives you real hope for beyond, right? And we had the discussion yesterday about what is his value, and Frank made the point that his trade value is actually going to be higher next year if he comes in and plays well. And it's not to say the Canucks are going to trade him. If anything, we know the plan is to keep him long term, you know, yeah. And that's what they're
just talking about the asset.
Yeah, and I think the more you show around the league that you're a player that can repeat the mm-hmm. things you're doing, the more valuable you become. And you're looking at $5.5 million. How much surplus value can he give you on that contract for 2 years?
Yeah.
And what does that mean potentially for not next year, but the year afterwards? If this team, who is now trying to be a playoff team next year, is being aggressive, if you make some more moves, can you actually compete in the second year of Kuzmenko's contract? Like, you're trying to make the playoffs next year, but you're not making a deep run next year. You got to build towards it. Could you do it in the second year and take advantage of that contract?
That's got to be Jim Rutherford's timeline, right? If he's saying 3 years is a long timeline to get this thing back on track, then year two of Kuzmenko's deal is probably what you're sort of looking at. And that would be the first year of Pedersen's new contract that you're thinking about. It's when a lot of deals start to expire for the Canucks, so they may have at least a little bit of flexibility, though they've taken some of that away with the Miller contract and some other things. They're going to have to give Hronek a new deal. But the point still remains. They are hoping to turn this around fairly quickly and win within the contract or within the time frame of Thatcher Demko's current deal.
Yeah, and we had the discussion yesterday about it's great the Canucks have some good players now, but you're playing these guys already.
Yes.
Where's surplus value coming from? And obviously, you need to get guys on ELCs and cheap contracts. But a guy making $5.5 million playing like an $8 or $9 million player, now that's how you kind of make up the gap, right?
Yeah.
That's how you make up for some inefficiencies elsewhere on your team. And that's a big boost, especially if Elias Pettersson repeats and builds on what he's doing this year, and you see a more consistent JT Miller next season. Now, JT, of course, until we see him lace his skates up next year, there's obviously going to be questions about trades and everything. We'll talk to Don Taylor coming up in a bit based on what Elliot Friedman had to say on Donnie and Dolly earlier today. But I'm still looking at JT being here most likely next year. And if you have him going and playing at a high level, okay, now you're starting to piece together what your forward group looks like. We still, like we talked about so much, you need something else alongside of him because I'm not sold on Garland or Besser. And Besser is obviously a guy who's continually an interesting topic of discussion.
Can you find another Kuzmenko?
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I don't think you can find another guy on an ELC the way you found Kuzmenko, but that's what you kind of need, right?
Yeah.
That's what they need.
You need somebody to really step up.
Yeah, and I don't think you can find a Kuzmenko in terms of everything that he's hit on, the marketability side of it, which I don't think is insignificant. Like, I think next season, you're going to have people buying tickets and buying jerseys and buying into the team because they want to watch Kuzmenko play.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's a big boon for the organization. So I think you're going to have a hard time finding a guy that hits on all those factors, but that's clearly what you need.
It's like with Kuzmenko, it's so hard to quantify exactly what he is. There's just so few realistic comparables that you can use for him.
Yeah.
Right? There's Panarin and maybe Kaprizov to a certain extent. We didn't expect him to produce at that level, but he's produced at Panarin level, you know, first year Panarin, that they're roughly around the same amount of points. And he's been all you could ask for and more.
Well, and the skating is getting better.
Yeah. Well, they've talked about his fitness.
Yeah.
And if that gets to a new level and he continues to grow and really show that want to understand the NHL game better and be better in those off the puck types of moments and what he's doing with the puck. You know, it's always a give and take with these types of players. Know when to make the risky plays and when not to. When we're up 2-1 in the third period, don't make that weird turnover at the blue line or try to do too much on offense in the third period when we got a 1-goal lead. But when we're down a goal, okay, maybe we're taking that chance. Those are the types of things that Kuzmenko is still learning. It is something you said to me yesterday. Stuck in my mind through the night, Sat. I was up all night thinking about it.
All night thinking about this.
All night thinking about this.
I'm intrigued. Do tell.
Management is... How does management feel about what is currently happening with this team? I think from a process standpoint, maybe, you know, there's some value there for sure, seeing some of the habits and maybe a little bit of vindication that the coach that has more of their vision or is more in line with their vision of what the team should look like is starting to put those pieces in place. But did they ever think they would be moving further away from the bottom five rather than falling closer to the bottom five of the standings?
I mean, this team's not making the postseason.
No.
It's clear. I mean,
you would have to win out.
Well, even if they
I was joking about it on Twitter the other night. People were getting mad at me. Can you not tell what sarcasm is?
Yes. I understand. Yes. It's a joke, right? I totally get it. And people are just so triggered easily nowadays on the slightest things, even jokes. But yeah, I mean, even if you win out, it may not even be enough, right? I mean, even if you win out and get to 95, you may still miss the playoffs, right? So you know what's not happening. And also, you know what's available in this year's draft. Mm-hmm. They're very aware of Connor Bedard. They're very aware of Leo Carlson and Adam Fantilli and some of the other top prospects in this draft. I think they very much are.
Fantilli got snubbed, by the way, in some of the college award rankings. Little Maple Leaf bias with Matthew Nyes, I think. Anyways.
I think so. Hey? Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's good. You're sticking up for the Italian guy. Yeah, that's all right.
Never happened before.
I'm definitely not surprised. So I think they're very much aware of what you can get in this year's draft. I think in a perfect world, they would like to see the team improve its structure and not win as many games.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think they're doing cartwheels in the management office because they're on a 4-game winning streak.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense, right? Like, there's only so much you can do as a GM to stop the team from winning or, you know, put them in a position to not win games, you know, shut guys down, trade away your UFAs. They've done all those things.
They even traded Curtis Lazar.
I know.
And he was playing a bit better. Like, but Lazar was playing slightly better. As soon as his value was like, all right, we'll give you something, he was gone. He was out the door.
Well, the penalty kill can't stop scoring now.
No,
so
I know.
It's kind of crazy the way that that's been going.
Like, he went from being under 50% in his faceoffs and he improved significantly.
But I think the one thing that, you know, when that comes to mind, you know, we're talking about alignment between management and coaching staff. And I can't help but think how much Rick Tocchet has said, I don't want my guys, or did say in his introductory thing, I don't want my guys playing like 25 minutes a night. That's not really sustainable. And here he is, like Quinn Hughes has played 8 straight games where he's been over 25 minutes. Pettersson is getting a ton of minutes. Demko's played all of his games but one to this point. Now, they haven't had a very heavy schedule of late, and that's going to change here over the final month of the season. But it is sort of funny, if we're being honest about it, how quickly a head coach is just like, you know what? I'm a competitive guy. I love winning games. We're in a tight game. I'm putting Quinn Hughes out there.
Yeah, of course. And also, I think the fact that they're so thin on the blue line in terms of who's available to them. It's hard. And the team is like, right now, the team is eager. They're excited. They're playing well. The new coach is there. And I think he doesn't also want to be like, all right, I'm not going to give you the best chance to win this hockey game, right? I think there's always that push and pull. And the last thing you want to do as a coach is come off as you're trying to lose this hockey game. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, players aren't wired that way. You can't approach it that way as a coach. And as the season goes on, it makes me wonder, though, because, hey, it's one thing now. You're trying to get the vibes back. You're playing the best hockey of your season so far. Players are feeling better. You're building a foundation. All those things are true, right? But do you get to a point as the season goes on here that there's more alignment with the coach, that he actually starts reducing the minutes significantly? You see the split with the goalies go down. You see guys maybe not play in certain games and situations change a little bit. I wonder if that starts happening.
Yeah.
You know? And I don't think they're going to try to lose games on purpose. Of course not, right? But I just wonder, because I don't think the goal is to win every single game down the stretch here. Because, I mean, what's the purpose of it? You know what I mean?
Well, Tocchet called these playoff games for his guys.
Yeah, and I get it from the coach's perspective.
Yeah.
You know, but management has done pretty much all they can. I think maybe their biggest miscalculation was just how they handled the whole Boudreaux thing.
Right.
You know, and we mentioned this yesterday, that I think the best thing to happen to this organization was for them to have a facepalm year and face reality in a big way, you know? But I think if you would have played the Bruce thing differently and kind of given him, even if it was a false vote of confidence, then you could have kind of prolonged it and been like, hey, he's going to be our guy. People kind of go quiet a bit. At least the speculation ends a bit. And then you wait till March, and then you make the change. And then there's only 15, 16 games left in the season. And at that point, you're probably not going to make up a lot of ground, right?
Yeah.
And I think that probably would have been the ideal way of doing it. But we all know what happened with the Bruce thing. And it got to a point where it was like, why aren't you letting this guy out of his misery? So I think it's disingenuous to say, oh, they should have just kept Bruce, because everybody was saying, let the guy go, for goodness sakes. Like, what is going on?
No, it reached a boiling point that you could not come back from.
I mean, Forbes was writing about it.
Yeah.
You know, it became like an international human interest story. It was just really stupid, right?
Yes.
So they were forced into doing it. That whole situation, maybe you could have, you know, if it would have been able to prolong it. But once you made the move, once you made the trades, once you shut guys down, it's kind of like, you let the chips fall where they may, and the hope probably is you get a bottom five team. But right now, they're winning games.
Part of it always was, too, that this team was better than they had shown for so long this year, right? And yeah, I know they moved on from Horvat, and they've traded away some players. And, you know, when you have as many technically AHLers or 4A guys, quad A guys in your lineup as the Canucks do right now, you're not expecting to win a ton of games. But this goes back to playing with more structure and how that is helping this team for right now. And that is something you can't get over. But would they like to lose more games? I think, you know, if you had them in a dark room.
if you gave them truth serum.
Gave them the truth serum,
and
probably.
Listen, and I'm not trying to, you know, outright report anything here.
Yes.
All I'm saying is if you gave these people truth serum, I bet you they would say that we'd rather get a bottom five record and get a high pick, right? Because that's what's best for the organization. Management, managers manage, coaches coach, right? But I think at the same time, you have to be realistic about real world pressures and real world things that happen.
Yeah.
And you're not going to have the manager come down to the new coach and be like, dude, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
You're coaching too well. You're doing too good a job. Stop doing a good job.
Stop doing it. Stop making this team win.
Yeah, and you want to let the guy coach, right? You let him do his thing, build the foundation. That's what he's doing. And if he's coaching his butt off, and the coaches are and the players are playing their butt off and getting some results, that's just something that happens. You can't really do anything about it.
Canucks do have a better points percentage right now than the Coyotes, Ducks, Blackhawks, and Sharks in the Western Conference, and also a better points percentage than the Flyers, Canadiens, and Blue Jackets. So that's where things currently stand for Vancouver when it comes to the tank. And it's not looking all that great when it comes to getting and securing the highest draft pick possible.
We do have some good reaction on our text inbox, 650-650. In terms of Andre Kuzmenko, and Raymond says, if Kuzmenko is actually a real hits Panarin level, then the Canucks are a contender if they add more to the defense. And nothing makes your team better than having high-level players.
Yes.
And can Kuzmenko do this again next year and actually be a star-level player? Because if he is, it does change things. And also, Raymond says, can you give my friend Robin a shout-out? A big fan of the show. So shouts to Robin and Raymond.
Robin, shouts to you. Appreciate it. Love all the listeners to Canucks Central. I think about this text a lot because it's John Jose from Lions Bay. I'm not even remotely buying into the improved Canucks. Show me a Canucks team playing when it matters against better competition. That's Jose from Lions Bay, and it's a fair point.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And the thing is, again, like, you have to repeat this and take another step next year.
Yeah,
right. And even when we talk about Kuzmenko, and people texting in and saying, you know, if he hits Panarin levels, you have to like repeat this year at a higher. Like, I don't think he's a Panarin type player.
Yeah.
But the point being, if he hits that level, then yes.
Well, the hardest thing with Kuzmenko he didn't have this much production in the KHL, so to see him doing this is very surprising. But the other thing I would say about Jose's comment is a lot of everything that happens, everything that is said from now until the end of the season, and even in the exit meetings once this is all over, is going to fall on deaf ears for fans, for everybody, given the way that last season ended.
You got to prove it. I mean, we've seen the same story again. The only difference is they're actually structurally doing things the right way.
Yeah.
And even though they were winning last year, it was a lot of it on Demko. And even this year, they're relying on Demko in a huge way. And somebody's texting in saying, you guys are giving Taka too much credit. Like, it's all Demko. Whatever it is, you're getting results because of the players slash coach. You want to give the players more credit? Give the players more credit. Regardless, that's what's happening, right? However, they are actually doing things that are sustainable if you repeat them. Like, if you're in the right spot consistently,
yep, Muscle memory stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Like players have more trust because players know where each other's going to be, generally speaking. And if you are playing more connected in that way, and those things, actually, if you could repeat them, are sustainable.
Those are what's translatable to
them. And they didn't do those things at all last year. And even though they played better, and they were obviously a bit better in terms of their line changes, and I think their structure was obviously stronger, but it was a lot more simple in terms of just get the puck up ice and hunt it down and try to get down low and just repeat that cycle and try to be in the right spot. But obviously, there wasn't the same kind of emphasis on how you play your systems, especially on your breakouts and defensively, and especially if you want to have controlled exits. Yeah. There wasn't the same type of emphasis on it. So those things are improved and better. But are you going to be able to remember those things because you work on them over the offseason in terms of just your discipline, your mindset, and come into the preseason and training camp doing these things again and showing that you're ready for it? If you do it, then yes. But none of us are going to believe it until you do it next year.
That's impossible to get people to believe in this team unless they do it in October. You are what you are in October, and this team has not been good enough for too many years running in the first month of the season. This one from Gary Garrison. You are aware that it's Pi Day as in math, not Pi Day as in food, correct? Yes, I am aware.
All right, I didn't know that. I just went by what you said, so I thought it was food. I thought you were talking about food.
It's Pi Day. March 14th, 314. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
I knew that.
Yes.
I did know that.
Yes, obviously. No, 100%. And you know, and people are texting in too, and they're saying, you know, you can't play your defenseman 29 minutes a game. Obviously not. Yes. But also, they don't have Filip Hronek in the lineup right now.
No.
And can you
don't have OEL. They don't have anybody.
Yeah, and hey, people are saying, OEL, you're probably better off not playing him. Yeah. But the point stands, even Ethan Bear, right, who's better than some of the guys you currently have. Next year, you're going to have a healthier lineup. Injuries can happen. But in terms of if you want to say what's sustainable and what's not, like, this lineup's kind of going to be nothing close to what you're going to see next season. Hopefully, it's going to be a lot better.
Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. This is Canuck Central coming up. Got Don Taylor, the legend himself, joining us next on Canuck Central. Man, I'm getting chirped for my potato chip take.
I understand. I mean, I had no idea. I had no idea.
It's National Potato Chip Day?
But no, Pi Day. Mm. That it was actually pi as in like pi, 3, 2, 3.1.
4.
4.
Yes.
I mean, keep going.
Yeah.
It's a long, long, long list of numbers.
You should know March 14th every year is Pi Day.
Yes,
JT Miller's birthday as well.
JT Miller, I never thought of JT as a science guy.
turned 30 today. We're going to talk more about JT coming up in just a moment.
Are you saying he's old now?
I did not say that. I just said he turned 30. No, but he's playing the best hockey of his season so far, and. It is encouraging, but, you know, as I said on Twitter Saturday, Canucks need this JT Miller in October. They needed this JT Miller in October. They didn't get a lot out of anybody in October and November of this past year. So, and the slow starts have been killing this team as they try to get back into the playoffs for the first time in a couple of years.
Leadership, right?
Yep.
Leaders show up ready and prepared.
Yep. And even talking today, he's like, you know what cup teams do? They show up 3-4 weeks before training camp into their city.
And you know what? And I wonder, we spoke about this during, you know, during the summer or heading into it. It's like, you know, if you wondered how management may feel about guys showing up so late, guys showing up just days ahead of training camp, I wonder if they wish guys were here earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Rick may have been speaking for a lot of people.
Dropping hints?
Yes.
Kuzmenko was here very early in the summer.
Yeah.
Learn from Kuzmenko. Learn from Kuzi. But my potato chip take, if for those who haven't heard it, is I love me a regular potato chip.
But right now I'm on a big just original Lay's.
Original Lay's?
Yes. Just like
no dip, just original Lay's.
Original Lay's. Right now, like with the sandwich, original Lay's.
Yeah,
the Lay's just goes well. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, it's not too thick one. Yeah. It's, you know, a little bit airy.
The chip with a sandwich is pretty elite. you know.
Oh, yeah.
Last Sunday, I was at great little Italian joint on Commercial watching Juventus lose to Roma, and had a fantastic panino. And it comes with some chips on the side. Nothing better. Nothing better. Better than fries, potato chips with a sando.
With a sandwich, yes. With a burger. I've gone to places where
you're not a fries
chips.
And burger guy though.
I am.
Are you?
Oh yeah. When I have a burger, I'm gonna have fries.
Okay.
I'm not. I mean. Okay. You know, I mean, I don't have it all the time, but if I'm gonna have a burger, I want fries.
All right.
You know, like we've gone over this. You can still eat whatever you want every once in a while. Just, you know, be careful with what else you eat the rest of the day.
Okay.
Now, you shouldn't be having like McDonald's breakfast
all the time.
You know, and then like having McDonald's, you know, breakfast, and then like having burger and fries for lunch.
Yes.
And then having pizza for dinner. Like, that's probably not a good combination. But you could do one of those things.
I mean, we all watch Super Size Me, okay? So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I do think just dipping regular chips though in yogurt is an elite. Like just plain chips and yogurt, but me and dairy don't go well, so I don't do it very often.
Like Greek yogurt?
Greek yogurt.
You don't put anything in it?
You don't have to. If you want to make it into special dip, if you want like tzatziki or something, sure, but just regular yogurt goes well with chips. sour cream and bacon is what somebody's.
I actually do that a lot. Put a little bit of garlic, like get some Greek yogurt, put a little garlic in there and some hot sauce, and then all of a sudden you got a nice little sauce for your meal.
Yeah, it's like
very good. Anyways, enough food takes for today.
I don't know, I'm hungry.
At least for now.
I want to eat something
takes.
Now. I brought a couple wraps with me.
Oh, did you?
I'm hungry.
When is Sat not hungry? That is probably the bigger question.
Had a good exercise this morning, so I'm definitely hungry. And you know when you do like when you exercise and you do a lot of running around in a day?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you just can't stop eating? That's kind of where I'm at today.
Oh, okay. Makes sense. You've been all over the place today? All over the city?
Pretty much.
Okay. What's the update on Hronek? Waiting eagerly to watch him play and see how he fits in. Tockett mentioned this earlier today and says he's progressing well, should start skating soon. And there was a eagerness to his answer of wanting to see Hronek in the lineup and at least get a sense of what he's got looking ahead to next year. I think that not just for you, the listener, unsigned text, always sign your texts, but Canucks fans and I think the coaching staff really wants to see how it all fits.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, you want to get a sense of can these guys be a pairing or are we better off having them on separate pairs? I think it can help inform not only management to some degree about what they need to do, but also talking to the coach about what he feels like could be the best fit for each type of player and how much does that inform some of your targets this offseason and how that may work together. Because one of the things that I think is super important that I don't think they've been able to identify consistently here, and this is why it's important to have a style of play, an identity, whatever it is, like what is your style of play? Mm-hmm. What is it that you're going to rely on day in and day out that's repeatable for your organization? And then find the types of players that fit into what you're looking to do. Not that you want to, you know, force guys into your system, but if you're out there trying to make acquisitions, you want to look at two things. One, how can they work with our players? And how can they fit our style of play? And I think that makes it a lot easier for you to narrow down the types of players that won't fit, the types of players that will fit, then see if you can find or acquire one of those ones who could fit potentially how you're trying to play. So I think having Hronek come in and play, even if it's 5 or 6 games, I think is important for that aspect. I think it just help inform your decision-making and also the coaching staff in terms of their preparation, not only for the pairings, but also how he may play within their team, how he may affect their PK, their power play, and have a full offseason of being able to plan those things out.
I think Jalen Chatfield is probably the best example of a recent failed Canuck that is having a ton of success elsewhere. Like we've seen Jalen Chatfield. We know what he is as a player. Carolina's figured out how to maximize that player in a third pair type of role. And, you know, Hronek's obviously looking higher up the lineup, but the Canucks need to find more guys that just fit into what they do and you maximize that player for what they are at.
Yes.
At a significantly lower cost.
Absolutely. I mean, and those are the things you got to find. Can you find a guy who's going to be making $800K, $900K, or $1 million that can play a significant role for you? You know, and we discussed guys like Guillaume Brisebois yesterday. Best case scenario, can one of those guys fit in internally for you? Most likely organizational depth, but can you find one of those guys, right? And ultimately, when you look at this year's free agent class, outside of like a couple of higher end guys, your best bet is to try to find some of those guys that haven't fit elsewhere that you feel like can fit for your organization.
The bargain basement types go shopping at the five and dime. I guess you could always look at that. One of the things that I wanted to get to as we wait on Don Taylor actually came from Donnie and Dolly today. And that's on JT Miller.
More JT Miller talk.
I mean, it's his birthday. We should talk about him.
His birthday.
Do we have to say nice things? I guess we do.
But I mean, it's not negative. It's not like a...
I tend to say nicer things about JT than other people do in this market.
You love JT.
But it's hard to disagree that JT has played the best hockey of his season since Rick Tocchet came in as head coach of the Vancouver Canucks. And I think there's a little bit of vindication for the management after all of the vitriol that was spewed based on the rumors that came out of trade negotiations with the Pittsburgh Penguins. Shouldn't they have pulled the trigger on whatever was being discussed with JT Miller? And Elliot Friedman today provided a few more details on what those discussions were like and why the deal fell apart. Here it is.
I think there were people in the organization who didn't want Shen traded, right?
Right.
And he got traded.
Yeah.
He got traded. So what that says to me is Rutherford will listen to opinions, but he'll do what he thinks is best, right? So,
right.
You know, I think so. We'll see if Shen comes back this summer. We'll see what the future holds. But at the very least, he has shown that you can tell me your opinion and all, like what that said to me was Shen wasn't getting traded for like a sixth round pick. They got what they got and they said, that's the price we want. And we move them. Like if you take a look at Miller, there's a couple of reasons this trade with Pittsburgh didn't happen. Number one, out of it, the Canucks had to know that they were getting a young center.
Yeah.
There wasn't one available. So that's one of the reasons this trade didn't happen. The other one was, I think there were players coming back to Vancouver that they didn't want to keep full time. So they were trying to look at where else can we move these players. Now, I do think there was one option that was available to them, but it still wasn't enough to get the whole deal done. So what this says to me is JT Miller is not going anywhere unless the Canucks get the price that they want for him or the piece that they want for him. So that's kind of the way I look at it is could JT Miller get traded? Yeah, I think it's possible. But I think it's not happening unless the Canucks say, this is what we want in exchange, and we're not getting it unless we get it in exchange.
Now, that sounds a lot like things we talked about here in the lead-up to the trade deadline on Canucks Central. And, Sat, things you had mentioned on what was going on with JT, even when you first mentioned everybody's on the board should the right offer come along, outside of Pettersson and Hughes, basically. Yeah. But I disagree with the sentiment that the Canucks should have just done anything to get rid of the Miller contract.
I think that comes down to your perspective of the team-building route they should be taking.
Yeah. And I get it, you know, the rebuild versus retool thing. On board, understand where those sentiments come from. It's obvious which direction this team is going right now. However, when it comes to Miller and the way he's playing right now, if anything, management should feel vindicated that they didn't take whatever was on the table from Pittsburgh, take on whatever bad contract or whatever money that Pittsburgh was looking to offload onto the Canucks to make this deal work, because you've got a really good player. And if your window is to win in the next 3-4 years, as we were just talking about in the first segment of the show, well, you're going to need a JT Miller type to help you get there. And when JT is playing like he is right now, he is a guy that helps you win a lot of hockey games, as we've seen in these last couple of weeks. He is a guy that can get you to the playoffs. He is a guy that profiles as somebody who can have success in the playoffs with the type of style that he plays, a power forward type center. And all of those things, while you may not like the contract, are still true. And when you see Miller playing like he is right now, I can only think it is foolish the idea that you would just want to get rid of the contract for whatever deal was on the table with the Pittsburgh Penguins. Right now, management should feel vindicated that they didn't go down that road.
So I think, well, a couple of things. Number one, his best value, if you look at to move him, or actually any player really that has term left on his contract, is play better down the stretch, which does help at least a little bit. But this offseason, we keep talking about the free agent market. Mm-hmm. There isn't a lot there, especially when you're looking at centermen available. Even if you don't think JT's a long-term center, teams may look at him and say, or anybody else, right, that can do that's available, and it becomes a far more valuable trade commodity because your other option to go to free agency doesn't exist. So I think that once you get into the offseason here, there is a reality that you may be in a better bargaining position with certain players that are good, especially when you look at what's out there. And the other thing is, an MO has really emerged from this front office. I know we discussed this before, but I don't think they're willing to move off players in key positions, and that's a center, right? Top six centerman, you know, a top defenseman even, and a goaltender, unless they believe they have a clear pathway to replace that player.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be with this trading partner. We saw this with the Horvat and Hronek acquisition.
Yeah.
But it has to be, we have to feel confident that there is an answer out there that we're going to be able to get if we make this move for these assets. And if you don't think that's there right now, we're holding firm. So I think that's the thing, and you keep hearing that from the reporting. They couldn't find another center. And I think that's the big thing. And not necessarily from Pittsburgh, but it's, okay, if you're going to give us the draft picks and this prospect, where else can we go get the center?
Yeah.
And I don't think that was available to them. They couldn't find that. And until you find that elsewhere,
yeah,
I don't think they're going to have an appetite to move him.
Well, and look, we don't know which players were involved, but it's obvious. You just look at Pittsburgh's salary cap. They would have had to send some money back Vancouver's way in order to make it work. Maybe not so much for this current year, but a couple, like, you know, going into next year, they would have probably liked to move a $4-ish million contract, maybe Marcus Pettersson or one of those types that still had a couple of years remaining. So even if you look at it that way, you're not opening up the entire $8 million then for next year. You're opening up $3 million or $4 million and moving on from JT Miller, but now you have a huge hole at second line center that you've got to open up or that you've got to fill with only $4 million because now you've taken on a contract that's moving into next year and beyond. So,
and then all of a sudden you don't have anybody who can drive play potentially on your second line.
Yeah. Like, so it's not as black and white as like, hey, just get rid of this contract and all of a sudden we've got $8 million opened up. There's not really many, any teams, almost any team in the league would have had to give you a contract back in order to take on Miller, especially Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. So that whole notion never really, you know, never really, I never really truly understood. But the fact of the matter is, JT is still an 80-point player. He's going to be close to a 30-goal scorer, and he's showing again that he can play down the middle of the ice. Is it a long-term solution through the middle of the ice? Maybe not, but at least for next year, you know you have that guy. And it's obvious once they made the Hronek trade, you're trying to win as early as next year.
They said they're trying to make the playoffs next year.
Yeah.
That's the goal next season. So if you're trying to make the playoffs next season, you need two capable centermen. And that's why the offseason to me is going to be really fascinating here. And I think it's very clear that they're not looking to accumulate draft picks and make those draft picks and wait. So if they get picks in future prospects, I think they're going to be looking to flip them, which I don't have an issue with as long as you make the right trades and a team does become competitive. Like, just make the trades for the best assets,
yeah,
and then find the best answers with those assets, right? Like, don't try to like force something with a team just because you're desperate for a centerman, right? So I think this offseason, especially with teams that A, are going to fail in the playoffs,
mm-hmm,
or teams that B, feel like they got to make a bit of a change somewhere, those are the teams that all of a sudden may allow a decent player become available for you.
Yeah.
And if you have a way to move somebody out and you have some extra assets, that's how you can pounce on it.
But as of right now, you know, especially after you make the Hronek trade, it makes it that much more difficult to move on from a player like JT. You're down an asset on one you could use to trade and go out and get a centerman. There are other obstacles here that you have to sort of navigate, but should they have not made the Hronek trade and continued down the path of slow playing this build? Probably. I agree with all that, but they've made their decisions, and now you've got to figure out how to make the most of the decisions you've made and how to make the most of your team going into next year. And that's a lot easier to do with JT Miller than it is to do without JT Miller.
Right. And one thing that I think we have to keep in mind here, especially with how the team is playing, even though they're playing better and even though JT is playing better, and I see people, you know, Al from Nelson texting in, and I know people like Jeff Rowe, also big fans, are saying you can't replace this guy, and mm-hmm. you know, the things he can bring are not easily replaceable. And I know there are people that obviously do believe in JT and what he can do, but I don't think this end of year run, which is personified by the team, but also by the player, JT Miller, just like the team is playing a lot better, yeah. right? And we're seeing it coincide. And the big question is, can JT, much like the team, sustain this and do it again next season? Like, that's a big question around JT and what he can do. But the way he plays right now, it makes you believe that he could potentially do it, right? And that's why you see the belief in the text inbox. I don't think organizationally they're going to be like, oh, wow, like JT's playing so well, we can't move this guy. Or, oh, wow, these guys are playing so well, we got to keep every single one of
the
these
guys. The
equation
should remain the same.
I think it is. It's like, if you can improve your team, anybody's available outside yeah. of a couple of guys. And we'll see what happens this offseason, right? And I think that's the right mentality to have, because I think a couple of things are emerging. One, if you have the right coach who's aligned and you can get that guy to have players buy in and play the way you're playing, which means you have the right core pieces in place in terms of the coach, a couple of guys that can do that in Pedersen and Hughes, some other guys you're keeping. The rest comes down to, all right, we got to be cutthroat in how we build this team out. Yeah. And I think the only way you can actually win with this short-term plan in terms of being a contender today and tomorrow is to be cutthroat with your decisions and not be afraid of a bold move.
Yeah.
Because it's about making your team better, and if that means you got to make a move you didn't want to do, but it's for the greater good, you got to do it.
Yep.
And yep. I think they're going to be open to it.
It's the equation should remain the same in that, you know, if you had a value you were willing to trade JT Miller for at the deadline, that shouldn't change at the draft
for anybody, yeah. right? And I think that's the truth here about these guys. And I think you should be happy as a fan for two things. If you believe in JT, one, you'll be here long term potentially. You feel a lot better about him being here. And if not, are the Canucks getting to a point where some of these players are looked at a lot more favorably, which yeah. allows the organization to maybe make the moves they're looking to make to turn this team around?
Yeah. And the point I made off the top was simply they were right for not just giving up JT Miller for whatever was on the table in those discussions with Pittsburgh.
Well, especially if you have to take a contract back, you have trouble moving.
Yeah.
Why take that on now? You know, I'm with you. Like, I don't think you should make that move now unless you could get all the money off your books and have a couple of really good draft picks. That, and then it's like, okay. But if you have to yeah. take money back and has term left on it,
yeah.
I can understand why the organization said, hey, why should we add more money on the books? Mm-hmm. And then it makes it even harder for us to make the other moves we're looking to make.
And that's essentially what Elliot said there. There was a contract the Canucks would have had to take back. They were trying to move, but could not do it. And there's where the deal fell apart. We'll see how it progresses into the summer. But JT Miller playing the way that he is a sign of good things for the Canucks, his trade value, and much more going into next year. A couple of texts coming in. From Raymond, if JT can play like this for the next three seasons, a two-way beast, I think all of us that wanted him traded would say we were wrong. And more coming in. Miller to Winnipeg for Blake Wheeler, straight up.
So here's the thing. Like,
yeah,
that's interesting at least because it's like, hey, at least you get a player back who can help you next year. So can it satisfy, like, you know, this guy helping you? But he's not really a center anymore, not an effective one.
Yeah,
doesn't really solve that issue for you. But I think as much as that's ridiculous, it's actually not as unrealistic as long as you can get something else in return. But I don't think you're getting that else and something else in return, right? So, yeah. like, why would you make that move? And I don't again, Vancouver, I don't think is willing to just get rid of a player.
Wheeler on an expiring deal going into next season. All right. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. There's more to come on JT and your Vancouver Canucks. Also going to get you ready for tonight's matchup with the Dallas Stars here on Canucks Central.